I'm Dr. Don McDonald. Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse, the podcast. I believe one of the most valuable things you can give yourself as a chiropractor is taking time. Time to become more inspired, present, and focused. Weekly, I'll be bringing you stories of triumph, mindset shifts, and lessons from people who are breaking through their limitations. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now, let's get started. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode with Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And today I have one of my mentors that we met at Parker. He's like an amazing chiropractor. He has one of the biggest hearts you'll ever see in the world. He was one of the biggest leaders of the seminar after the seminar at all the Parker seminars that we've been to over the last like 20 years. Dr. Rick Wren, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, brother. It's funny because I'm watching you smile as you're saying all that stuff because you're actually visualizing it and seeing it.
Yeah, I totally am actually visualizing it. Because the funny thing is I remember the very first Parker that I ever went to, I saw you speak and it was always the 100 a day talk.
Right.
Which blew my brain because I was like, I was probably like maybe rocking a 20 a day or something at the time. And right. And then just after to hang out with you afterwards was so nice. And that's what I really enjoyed about Parker seminars was just the ability to hang out with the speakers afterwards as well, because there's one thing getting the information. It's just like anything, we can get the information in our head, but until you have an opportunity to kind of converse back and forth and talk with it, you don't kind of own it in your body. So I want to thank you for all those years being a mentor.
I love doing that. I love that opportunity. I love to draw those people into our family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's, for people who haven't heard of Dr. Rick Wren, can you tell us a little bit about like how this whole started? How did you become so amazing? Like when did this start?
Well, you know, I was in, I don't know how far you want to go back, but you know, I had my first chiropractic adjustment when I was 8 minutes old, and it was by a chiropractic student, my father. But he had to drop out of chiropractic college due to money issues. He was also having grade problems because he was working two or three jobs. Mm-hmm. You know, your assistant to go to school back then wasn't nothing like it was. They finally kicked in and started giving us student loans, I think my junior year.
Yeah.
Which back in those days was called freshman, sophomore, junior, senior. Anyway, to make a long story short, I went through my whole life visiting chiropractors, most of them going to Parker seminars. My dad was not a chiropractor, but they thought he was a chiropractor, always wanted him to adjust them when they visited. And then, you know, when I met my wife, I realized she was going to be high maintenance and I needed to figure out a way to make a good living. So I decided to go to chiropractic college, and to shorten the story even more, a year later, my dad decided to go to chiropractic college. So I graduated from Texas Chiropractic College in 1980, and then he graduated in 1981. But because I'd been around all these Parker doctors and saw they had nice homes and nice cars and nice clinics, they were all telling me, you know, when I decided to go to chiropractic college, you've got to go to Parker seminars. Mm-hmm. And so in 1978, when I was considered to be a junior intern, I went to my first, and you know I got to tell this story.
Yeah, you tell it.
You know, we had these 12 guys that are – studying the Parker principles and doing what all the successful docs told us, wear a suit on Friday, go out to eat on Friday, wear your suit and tie, hand out your cards to the, you know, the clinic, and tip 20%. And so anyway, we're the group that all load up in a group of cars, head up the Interstate 45 to go to our first Parker seminar in downtown Dallas, the old Hilton, which is now condemned. They had three a year there, March, May, and September. And so we pulled up in March of 78, dressed up in our one and only suit, got our ice chest full of beer and bologna and cheese. And we go in, and I can remember to this day, we got the largest suite in the hotel in 1978 for $220 a night. But when you got 22 guys standing in there, you could afford it.
22 guys. How many beds were in that room?
We're just stacking them everywhere. You know, pulling cushions off the couch. You know, just doing all this stuff. It was a nice large suite. and the hotel never really caught us or got on us. I don't know. But anyway, we would drag doctors up to that suite and offer them free beer and bologna and have these long talks, you know, the seminar after the seminar, yep. which you're talking about.
Yeah.
And after that first seminar, I decided a couple of things. One, I needed to start seeing 100 patients a day as fast as I could. And then two, if I did that, I would be allowed to speak. And I got my first opportunity to speak in late 1985 to early 86. I say 85, but I read something the other day that indicated to me I thought maybe it might have been 86. Been speaking okay. there ever since.
That's cool. Let's just go back because I never really had an opportunity to meet Dr. Parker. I actually heard him speak when I was going to Palmer, and we were playing at the Cairo games in Dallas, and he spoke when I was a student because I was playing hockey and basketball for Palmer, and we were in Dallas. But tell me, when was the first time you met Dr. Parker, and then what was that like?
Well, I mean, I met him in 1978, but, you know, I was a student, and you know how students are. We're tired of sitting in the classroom all the time. Yeah. So we sit in the class some, get out.
Eat bologna and drink beer.
Yeah, but the doctors, the Parker doctors, and they're still that way, are so nice. You know, they take you into the bar and buy you drinks, buy you food, you know. We ran some very expensive tabs, and those guys would just pick them up, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my first opportunity. But I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you, that I was unimpressed with his speaking ability because it's old cowboy style, dragging his voice along, holding his cigar in his mouth. And you know, I expected somebody to put my ass on fire, you know.
Yeah.
And that just wasn't happening. So it was probably – around I sent him a book that I went to trouble to put together, all the stats and pictures. I posted some photos of it on Facebook not too long ago. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time, a lot of money on it, and I listed all my stats in there, and it was based on stats in 1985. And then when I sent him that, I kept a copy for myself. In fact, I'm looking over at it on the coffee table. And he sent me a letter back thanking me, saying it was the most moving thing he'd ever seen, whatever. So when I went to the next Parker seminar in 85, I'd been, at that point, probably 3 times 7, 21, probably plus 7, so probably about 28, 30 seminars
yep.
at that point. And he put in that letter, be sure to come to my suite and let me give you a big hug. And so that's when we really started generating a friendship, was about 85.
That's good. So really your whole experience at the beginning of Parker were mostly just with all the Parker doctors, right? Like, so it wasn't his speaking that got you fired on, but the community that he developed that actually
that's
got
exactly
you.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. I learned to appreciate his speaking style and what he had to say later. But, you know, I think all students go through that where your butt's so tired of sitting in classrooms and stuff. You just sitting in another room, sitting in a chair for a long time. I think it takes 5 years for that to wear off and your butt becomes normal again.
Yeah. And it's also more fun when you're having interaction talk, because you're so used to that, like you said, getting one way information from the stage that now you get the two way information when you're speaking there. So tell me when you did your first talk at Parker, like when was that? And how did that feel? And were you nervous and how did you deal with that?
Well, let's see, that's late 85, 86 is that 30 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can you do that math that fast?
I was born in 71. So yeah, it's over. Yeah. It's over the 30 years ago.
Well, so I don't really remember all that much. I do remember that Jim wrote me a letter. In the letter, he kind of states that I'm not ready to speak yet. Mm-hmm. But I could do one-on-one mentoring.
Yeah.
And then shortly thereafter, somebody couldn't show up. And Jim had been showing everybody my book up in the suite and my stats and all that stuff. So a lot of people knew about me really fast.
Yeah.
And knew I knew a lot, apparently, because I'd been in practice, you know, 5 years at that point. And somebody couldn't show up, and I don't remember who it was, and I don't even remember what the subject matter was. They just come to me and said, can you speak on this? And I just, without even thinking and not even caring, I just go, absolutely.
Yeah. You know, yes first, figure it out later.
Yeah. Yeah. Put me in there, coach. So that's what it was. I don't remember really being nervous. But for one reason is it was kind of funny back in those days. I guess it still happens in some ways, but the newer speakers were always kind of stuck off in a back hallway in a smaller room. So yeah. that's where my first class was, because that speaker, you know, wasn't drawing a lot of people. You know, I wouldn't main stage by any means. So I don't even remember how many people were in there at the Dallas Hilton. I think we were only running like three columns. In the hotel, I think we maxed it out when the ballroom had like 600 to 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. So, and that's one of the reasons we had to move half of it over to the Sheraton, which is still a fairly nice hotel and still there for the CAs. It's about a 3 or 4 block walk away. So I don't remember being nervous, but I might have been.
That's cool. And so during the time that you were at Parker, when Jim was still there, did it go through like a phase? Like did things change, or did things evolve, or did things stay kind of the same, or how did that evolution go from the time you started to meet him in 85 until he kind of phased out of the seminars?
Oh, it definitely evolved in a good way. It got to a point that Dallas would always have 1,000 to 2,000 people. And that's when we moved to the DFW Hyatt, and the DFW Hyatt, in a backdoor way, helped create our tribe, because there was this disco in there. It was a bar and a disco. Mm-hmm. And these same guys were the disc jockeys, the DJs all the time. And they played music that we all loved.
Yeah.
They would have this dancing contest every time.
Yeah.
We'd all compete in this dancing contest, and everybody wanted to go to the DFW Hyatt to go hang out to the class after class, which is in that bar that, you know, had the DJs. And that went on for, I think, 10 years. That's where we were. And now to think about probably any seminar, I lost my earpiece here, to think about any seminar doing a thousand, a couple thousand, three times a year in Dallas is pretty crazy.
That's huge, amazing. And I was just curious, how many times did you win the dance competition?
At least two or three.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, your trophy was a bottle of champagne.
Oh, really? So you have good motivation to get out there and move, right?
Yeah. That's
awesome. So is there any kind of outstanding stories that kind of come to mind when you think of Parker seminars over the years?
Oh, I'd probably have to think about it a little bit, be very specific, and it probably means I had to throw somebody in the bus, so I don't know that I want to do that. But.
Well, let's talk about when the fire in Vegas. That's a story that I don't know if that many people will know about, but maybe tell a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was around the fall of 1980, and it was going to be my very first Vegas seminar. I'd been in practice since September 8th, 1980, and it's probably October, November that they had this large explosion at the
Was it MGM? Was it the MGM?
Yeah, it's the old MGM. That's what it was. That's exactly right. And this fire, it started above where the auction bottles were. Nobody knew about it, and then it got so hot up there that it blew all these auction bottles up, and it just made this huge explosion blow through the casino. And I don't remember how many people died, but I think I remember like 20, something like that. But this is where, you know, Jim's famous for getting flown off the roof with a helicopter holding on to his briefcase.
Yeah.
Because he was there planning the seminar. And everybody was going, because the fire was so bad downstairs, everybody was going up to the top of the roof. Well, they didn't have any way to get people off the roof except for helicopters.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Jim was fine. We ended up moving the hotel next door. I can't remember what the name of that was, but Wayne Newton owned the hotel.
Yeah.
And So my first and probably my second, I don't remember if they had the hotel fixed by the next year or not, but was actually next door. It was a common name. I think it's been tore down. Apparently my ear's really slick. It's falling out of my right ear. My left ear holds good. But yeah, Wayne Newton was a great host. He was excited to get several thousand people automatically into his hotel. Mm-hmm. And we got to meet, talk with him, greet, and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah. And you're talking about funny stories. Okay. The following November, we're in Miami. Mm-hmm. And I fly with one of my buddies who's now deceased. He was part of the 12, you know, that, you know, went up on that trip I told you about.
Yep.
And we're going into Miami, and it's just me and him. And our wives at those times are going to almost every single seminar, his and mine.
Yep.
You know, I've been to 181, and my wife's been to 80 or 90 Parker seminars. So anyway, we fly in Wednesday night. We get in there late. It's probably 11-ish, 12-ish. We stop, get a six-pack, go up to our room so we can go sleep. And at that time, everybody was real big on, do you want a low floor because of what happened at that Vegas? I'm talking about all over the country.
Oh, really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. Everybody was panicking about you know, don't be above the third floor. You know, you got to be jumpable level, you know.
Jumpable level.
That's exactly what it was. So the lady says, do y'all need to be on a lower floor? And I go, no, we're cool. So yeah. I don't know. I think we end up about the 10th floor, something like that. So we get in the room, throw our clothes everywhere they need to, open a couple of beers. And I walk over to the window and my buddy, John, his name is John Nuremberg, rest his soul, great friend. Anyway, I walk over to the window, and I look down there, and I go, John, there's fire trucks. He's on, like, you think how Texans talk to each other, he's like, F you. I said, no, there's fire trucks, John. No, you're jacking with me. They're dragging the hose into the hotel, John. F you. So finally he got up and looked, and there were fire trucks, and they were running the hose into the hotel. And we weren't panicking yet. We were looking to see what was going on, you know, listen for alarms going off. So I didn't even think the fire alarm went off. But within a few minutes, the firemen are coming back out, and it was just a fire in the kitchen. But because of that hotel doing what it did, they're overreacting to it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's something great. Now, I mean, they might not have overreacted, but I mean, that's just kind of the impression I got. But yeah, he wouldn't believe me there was actually a fire truck down there.
You'd be like, that's not good. The odds if it happens twice in a row, right?
Yeah, it's like about 1 year later, you know, that it happened.
Wow, that's crazy. So let's go into your practice. I always like to talk, you know, we have chiropractors from all over the world listening, and they're all different phases of practice. You got ones that are just starting out, the ones that are kind of rocking and rolling, and then later on the ones that are giving back or helping to mentor. So what were kind of the key things that you did when you started practice just to kind of get things rolling, just to give some advice to some of those new docs that might be just new grads?
Well, you know, I built a brand new clinic because the town I moved to had nothing worth a crap to rent. It all looked like dumps. And so I lucked out and found a guy that would help me get a loan on his property so he could build me a clinic. So he made money on me, basically. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, a wife of a couple of years, probably 3 years at the time. And then one son that was getting ready to turn 1 year old. And so, you know, I had a big push that I needed to make money fast because I'm already borrowing with a lot of money. The same dude helped me buy my first house too. So I'm buying a new house, a new clinic, you know, yeah. I'm in debt big time. And so the word around Parker at the time was the more you meet, the more you treat. Mm-hmm. So meet as many people as you can, hand out your cards as many as you can. And it'll make a difference. So, you know, when I opened, I was trying to think of my first patient's name. He was a Spanish dude. My wife's sitting here. I was wondering if she'd remember his name. What happened with that dude is a guy called me and says, hey, this guy's in my office and speaks nothing but Spanish, no English. And I'd met this younger doctor, and he was real open to me coming to town. He wasn't telling me to go away.
Yeah.
And he said, can you speak Spanish? And I go, sí, send him over.
I'll speak any language. I need food.
Yeah. Well, I was seeing no patients a day at the time for the first 2 or 3 days.
No patients a day. That should be a new seminar, from no patients a day to 100 a day. That's funny.
So I had all day to communicate with this dude, you know? But the truth is, though, I took Spanish in junior high and high school, so I could speak about 20-30%, which I still can. I speak 30-40% now. I work with a lot of Spanish people that learn new words and stuff. So I've always remembered that dude's name. Anyway, it took me, and I looked at stats the other day. I think it was in a month or 2 months. I got up to 100 a week already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember a guy that was mentoring me and helping me. That was one of my dad's friends, proteges is what he called them, proteges. And I'm like telling him, and I'm disappointed on it's all like 105 or something. And, you know, but I've been doing this and this and this, which were Parker principles, which they weren't that clear back then on the Parker principles, because I was the one that put them in an order. But he says to me on the phone, he says, hey, dude, you know, in whatever, 6 weeks or 8 weeks, you're already seeing 100 a week. And he says, I've been in practice 10 years. I'm barely seeing 100 a week.
Right.
So he's like, you just need to calm it down.
Was it mostly just from meeting people? Is that like how you got the initial people in? Like just getting out there and meeting people?
Yeah, that was a lot of it. But we were very fortunate that it's a smaller town. And newspaper got to a lot of people. So we ran ads on Sunday every week that talked about the chiropractic approach to headaches and back pain. Somebody else had written an article. So it helped us get jump started. But most of those people were shopping to see if they could come see you and not have to take x-rays. Everybody everybody wanted a cheap chiropractor. You know, I just want to be able to walk in, lay down, get adjusted, and leave.
Right.
When you're doing that, I'd call it get cracked. It's not really an adjustment. Yeah. So that was a big part of it too.
So you got up to 100 a week in the first about 3 months or so. And then, and then when we roll down the road again, sometimes this will happen to me too. Is you get rolling, your practice blows up. Have you got to that stage where you got burnt out? Just too much stuff going on. Give the listeners a few stories about that, just so, because I think there's a lot of chiropractors out there that kind of feel like they're in that burnt out phase.
Yeah. Truthfully, I've been doing this 37 years now. I've been burnt out several times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a lot of it's just not acknowledging your goals properly and, have over expectations for your goals. A lot of it's from not delegating enough. Mm-hmm. But I run into people all the time. I have a guy that walks up and talks to me all the time that used to go to Parker a long time ago. And he had a big, nice practice, and he's probably seeing about a third or fourth of that now. But he hadn't been to Parker probably in 10, 20 years. And he's the biggest burnout dude I've ever seen.
Right.
But when he tries to get me to admit being burned out, which I'm not now, because I got a lot of good things going on.
Yeah.
He looks at me like I'm lying. And I keep telling him, I said, you can't stay at home and camp out in your house and in your clinic and not get around other people that are more energetic.
Yes.
A lot of them are younger, you know, like you and Brandy. That's one of the reasons I love being around you guys. And there's new concepts and stuff that come along that you need to be a part of, you know, like I bought a digital x-ray unit a couple of years ago. It's very expensive, but I'm glad I bought it, but I wouldn't have been compelled to bite off the chunk if I hadn't have been around a lot of other doctors that, you know, bragged about it, showed me, you know, images and stuff like that. So, I can remember 1993 doing my first case fee plan where I allowed people to prepay.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for that, I'd be out of business, because if you relied solely on insurance in the early 90s, a lot of those guys are gone, guys and girls. or right. not.
So you'd recommend basically probably what's helped you is to get back on track quicker, because we all get burnt out, but it's in my book, I always call it closing the refractory period, right? So from the time mm-hmm. you kind of feel like you're getting burnt out to time you correct, you go into the repetitive Parker seminars, surrounding yourself with people that are on fire, that helps you to kind of reconnect your purpose so that you can kind of get back right. on track faster. Is that what you're... what you found?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But, you know, now Parker's only doing 2 or 3 a year. And so that's why I try to, you know, get involved in other seminars now, because it's just not enough.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Parker ever get back to doing to, because we were doing 6 a year. You know, that's the reason why I've been to 181, is because I was going to 6 a year forever.
Right.
And now there's 2 a year. So, man, it takes somebody 90 something years to catch me.
Well, you got a good record, eh? I think you're safe.
Yeah, I do too.
It'd be like in baseball if they suddenly closed the season down to like 50 games, no one would ever hit the home run record ever again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what do you do to keep inspired nowadays? Like, I know you still, what kind of other seminars do you go to? Because I know Parker, there's been lots of changes at Parker, you know, and now I'll ask you if you know more that's going on. We're heading out to Parker in March here coming up to kind of check out what's going on, but there's been lots of changes. Yeah. So we want to go to Vegas and we want to invite all the listeners out there. You come and hang out with Rick at the seminar after the seminar, because you usually be out at the bar afterwards and have Absolutely. A chat, right? So anybody's having challenges, you'll get some information in the seminars, but then you'll also be able to hang around the awesome chiropractors. But what other things have you been doing to keep yourself fired up?
Well, I try to go to as many seminars as I can, but I got 9 grandkids now. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I both have been in practice 37 years. So when I tell her I want to go somewhere, she gives me this cross-eyed look.
Yeah.
One-eyed cross-eyed look, like, you going again? Yeah. Because I just asked her that, you know, today is Gilles LaMarche's birthday. Groundhog Day is his birthday.
Yes.
And we're born the same year, and I mentioned to him that I want to go to his seminar in Puerto Rico, but it's 2 weeks after Parker Vegas.
Yeah.
So, of course, you know, I was really involved in the chiropractic emergency response team.
Yeah.
And I was invited to go the very first week after the hurricane hit there, but I'd already been to three, and then I went one more in Texas, and I'd been to one in Florida, and I'd been gone like 3 out of 4 weeks. And my wife said, no, you're not going to Puerto Rico. Plus I'm here, it's very dangerous, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, she would prefer, I probably went to 1 or 2 a year, mm-hmm. but I'd prefer to maybe go to 4 to 6 a year if I could.
Yeah. That's just, you find that's the good frequency to kind of keep yourself.
Man, hitting seminars every 2 months, you know, Parker was every 2 months, was just perfect rhythm for me. Mm-hmm. And the people I like being around are at, you know, chiropractic seminars, especially, you know, all these years. My best friends are from Parker, you know, like you and Brandy, I consider to be very, very good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been friends for a long time, and I met you guys there. So,
yes.
I like getting new friends. I'm not stuck on old friends.
Right.
Some old friends eventually got to throw them away.
Well, that's what I was going to go to the next thing too, is that, you know, we talk about, we become like the people we surround ourselves with, like the 5 people closest to us. Do you have a mental idea of how to surround yourself with the right people? Do you have to get rid of some people? Do you focus on trying to spend more time with certain people?
Well, I don't know if you've heard me talk about the 1 through 10 rule, but, you know, I was an only child, and, when I came to Sherman, Texas, I was looking for friends that were upbeat, professional, making some money, people you'd want to be around. And I was trying to make them, and I'll explain to you what a 1 through 10 is in a minute, but I was trying to make them a 10 from the get-go.
Right.
And then I found out that they didn't even qualify as a 5, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll give you a good example. There was this dude that was a good looking dude, and he was in business for himself, drove a Mercedes, you know, carried himself well, good golfer, all that stuff. And we were hanging out quite a bit. And then when he went from a 10 to a 5, and this is where I came up with the 1 through 5 rule, I mean, the 1 through 10 rule, he wanted me to lie for him, at which I didn't know he was doing this, so he could cheat on his wife.
Oh, wow.
I'm not getting part of that. Yeah. And I was so, so disappointed. So I was probably upset about that for probably a month, kind of like going through a divorce or something.
Yeah, with a friend, yeah.
Yeah, and so so now what I do is I'll make anybody a friend, but after I hang out with you a while, I know what number to put on. So a 10 is somebody that'll take a bullet and die for you.
Yeah.
A two is somebody that'll show up late to have a beer for you, but they're going to walk out on the tab and expect you to pick it up.
Great.
Yeah. So yeah. You have that. You it's in that range in there. So yeah. I let anybody be my friend now. I'm very careful on how much I trust you and how much I'll hang around you.
Right. You know, and time will tell, right? So once you kind of, yeah. once you spend some time, you slowly warm up to them, right?
Yeah. Plus I've also learned how to love everybody, no matter how they look, how they smell, how they dress. Just some you love more than others, you know?
Yeah.
I don't judge them just because there may be a reason that they don't smell good. There may be a reason they dress the way they do, you know? And I don't judge them. I love them, but you know, some people are easier to love than others.
Yeah. And it's kind of like keeping those boundaries, right? You don't want to have someone who's going to suck your energy, right? Cause you want to keep your energy for the important things.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You just learn to kind of, pleasantly evacuate the premises.
Yes. Don't have to make a big scene. Now let's go to the next thing. Part of your contribution was not only speaking at Parker seminars, but also, the meetings you guys did, the chiropractic masters.
Chiropractic masters.
Yeah. Tell the listeners a little bit about how that started and why you started that and how that's going.
Well, it was, 1995 and, everybody had been talking for a long time that we needed more going on in between Parker seminars. And I needed that opportunity as much as the people that was offering information to needed that opportunity. So I started driving to Dallas every Monday, which is 60 miles from me. And it was on Monday night. I'd see 100, 120 on a Monday and then drive down there. And then we would get there around 7-ish to 7:30-ish. And snack on something, you know, we always made fun of the ugly, smelly cauliflower that was in the room. and then we would start the meeting at 8 and be over at 9. And basically I was teaching all the things that are now known as the 21 Practice Success Principles. And that's why I wrote this. We were meeting every Monday, started out at a restaurant, then eventually ended up in a hotel that we're paying rent on every Monday. And we started noticing that somebody new would come in, you know, like at our table at a restaurant, at Mi Casino's restaurant. And we'd just spent 3 weeks talking about things you really should do the first 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. Then somebody come in that's starving and we back up and go back to that subject. So I drove home one night. This was after, I think we were in the hotel when I did this. I might've been still at Mi Casino's, but I wrote down all the things, and this is one of those kind of God-driven things. I drove home that night, and I sit down and wrote the 21 things down. I've got them right here, just in case you started buzzing me about them, because I don't remember stuff as good as I used to. but I sat down and wrote the 21 things that I'd learned at Parker Seminars in an order that would apply to your practice and your life, and it took me 30 minutes. I mean, I just wrote them out and turned them into the practice principles. So what we were doing at our meetings is we were videotaping them. When somebody came in out of order, they would check the tapes out of the library to catch up.
Great.
And now all those old videos and a whole lot of new ones, which by the way, I need to let you and Brandy know. All of them are on our website now, which is Society of Chiropractic Masters, and it's socm1895.com. Now, before your listeners panic, there's about 40 free videos discussing this subject, the 2-minute version, and you can get a lot from that. But for those that want to study it and become a master on it, well, then that's when you become a member. But right. What I want to make sure that you and Brandy knew is I just now got the videos from that seminar we did that you and Brandy were, part of the instructors.
Oh yeah.
And Dallas. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's on the website.
That's hilarious.
So don't let me forget to give you the code where you guys can get in there and see those videos. I've watched all of them. That was probably 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And they're really awesome.
That's cool.
Quality information, the video and all that is mediocre, but it's okay. It worked.
That's so funny because I totally forgot till right now. When we flew from Edmonton to Houston and then Houston to Dallas, and they had that huge storm, and our plane got hit by lightning when we were flying to there. That was a great seminar, right? We had all the peeps together, and we had a good time. I almost forgot about that in Dallas. So that's pretty cool that you have those videos up on that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's cool. So tell me a little bit about your mission trip after all the hurricanes and stuff. That's a really cool story.
Well, our Society of Chiropractic Masters was involved in going down to Hurricane Katrina. And it fell on such a weekend that I wasn't able to go. But all our other guys that met a lot over the years on Monday nights put together a group and went down there for Hurricane Katrina. And so we had an affection for doing something like this. But then when Hurricane Harvey hit Houston, and I had a lot of friends down there that I'm watching their videos and things, of water rising up in their house and, you know, their clinic and all that stuff, that motivated me. And I told my wife that I was thinking about going, and she didn't tell me no. She didn't give me that cross-eyed look, you know, like I get sometimes. I just started putting on the internet that I was going, and asked for donations so I could buy a lot of supplies and, you know, give stuff away to the people. I was even buying stuff like hammers and stuff because I knew these people were going to have to rebuild and their houses were flooded.
Yeah.
And all that. So we went to Houston, and then the following weekend we went to Beaumont and worked on the National Guard and anybody else that came through there. There's a lot of first responders of all kinds staying at a small dome for Beaumont. I mean, for Dallas would be small dome, big dome for Beaumont. And we worked on those people and others all around. And then, I think I skipped the weekend, and then I went to Florida, Hurricane Irma hit.
Yeah.
And flew into there because it's about a 15 hour drive. I didn't have a trailer. I didn't want to drive a trailer. I'm trying to do 4-day weekends on this thing.
Great.
And then when I came back, I went down to Rockport because I kept being told that it was hit harder than anything in Texas and nobody was going there. And there was a couple of Parker friends, Dr. Brad Hawkins and his wife, Dr. Stacy Hawkins, that they lost their clinic. So we went and did what we call the stress relief station. In the parking lot of their tore up, totally flooded clinic. And my wife actually went on that trip with me, and it was a 9-hour drive. So we drove the trailer down all loaded to do a fairly large chiropractic stress relief. We call it chiropractic triage because that gets the attention of the local officials.
Yeah.
You have to learn to dress the part and act the part and just walk in and do your thing.
Totally.
Start going in and asking questions. How can I help? Where can I set up? Whatever. They start getting all these stupid questions like, well, are you certified? And who's allowing you to be here and all that. So I always just walked in and I created a uniform. And yeah. I just walk in uniform and go, hey, we're going to set up over here. We'll stay out of your way. Nobody ever told me to go away.
I'm self-certified.
Yeah, exactly. Are you certified? Absolutely. Absolutely.
When in doubt, self-certify yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, because when they went down to Katrina, they warned me, because I didn't get to go with them, they warned me that they tried to go through Red Cross, and Red Cross didn't really want chiropractors there, and they were like, all right, if you're going to keep insisting set up, we're going to put you back over there by the dumpster, and so anyway, they said they finally kind of did what I'm talking about, but they learned the hard way. So I knew when I went down there, I already had t-shirts made up, caps made up, put magnetic signs all over the trailer that I borrowed, which I recently just bought it with my own money. And it stays loaded all the time. It's ready to rock and roll. The next time it's going to go somewhere, probably will be, just guessing, Texas or Oklahoma during the spring when the tornadoes come through.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about the experience of that. Like, you had some pretty emotional stories and some pretty cool stories about the people that you were able to touch. Can you tell me maybe one of the highlights of one or two of the highlights that you had doing that?
Well, this to me was the amazing chiropractic thing. I really believe 20 years ago trying to do this, people would refuse chiropractic. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I believe it's due to Facebook and how much people have learned about chiropractic at Facebook. 75% of the people we worked on never had been to chiropractor before in their life and wow. wanted to try it.
Well,
and we're very excited about it, but we're not doing any, you know, exams, x-rays, anything. We're just doing a little bit of range of motion palpation and, you know, doing some, you know, easy adjusting on them. And yeah, the people will fell in love with it. In fact, they'd come back day after day.
That's awesome. So you basically just gave a really good experience for people who maybe never had experience with chiropractic before, which now it opens their mind to being more open to actually receiving chiropractic care.
Yeah. But, you know, there was also people that expected, you know, chiropractic to help them, and they were excited that we were there. Like when we were in Houston and Beaumont, they're doing a thing called a mud out. And that's when the water gets in the house, especially 4, 6, 8 foot deep. They go in and they mud it out, which means, of course, there's crap all in there, but they're cutting everything out 2 foot above where the water was.
Right.
You know, so all the sheetrock, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're airing it out and spraying it with, you know, anti-infected stuff and letting it dry out to try to cut down the mold. But these people, like the church we went to in North Houston area, those people were awesome. A car would pull up and they'd say, stay in the car, just tell us what you need. And they'd have that car or that pickup full within 2 minutes. Food, water, diapers, didn't matter. Car after car after car after car.
Wow.
It was amazing. But then they also had, it was a big church. Then they had these people that were volunteering their time going out to mud out, and they knew we were closing at 5. And so they'd make sure they got back there by 4 or 4:30. And they're covered in mud and, you know,
whatever else.
Yeah, whatever else. Yeah, because that stuff doesn't smell good.
And no.
It stinks. So, yeah, you had people like that really appreciated it. Of course, the ones we typically set up, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Friday, Saturday, just depending on the situation and the number of people and how many volunteers we had, you know, that could work. Because, man, it's tiring.
Yeah, no doubt.
Especially as your volunteers drop. The more the hurricanes hit, the less volunteers we had.
Right. And then also, too, you're dealing with people that have huge amounts of emotional trauma, and they're stressed out. And no matter how much you put your egg on or kind of block that, it's emotional, right? So it would be taking a lot from you.
Yeah, but it's very rewarding. I'm almost tearing up right now just thinking about, you know, the opportunity to serve people, because a lot of those people were hugging on you when they were done and just so thankful.
Yeah.
You know, because people walk up, not many, but some walk up and go, oh, how much is it going to cost us? It's all free, man.
Yeah.
Just sign the sheet over there. We had to do the waiver.
Yeah, yeah. Informed consent or whatever. Yeah. And then check
just
them out.
Get busy. Yeah.
So I think that's great for chiropractors to know, because a lot of them would be afraid to do it, because they're like, what if someone says something about that we're not allowed to do it, right? When you have to kind of get rid of that fear and just get out there and serve, right?
Yeah. If you go to Facebook, you can see a lot of the pictures and videos that you're referring to. Chiropractic Emergency Response Team, the short version of it is CERT, but Chiropractic Emergency Response Team, there's a lot of Facebook stuff. I haven't been active on it for a while, but there's just a lot of good videos and stuff. There's an interview where I interviewed this couple that I'd met in the hotel down by Beaumont, and if you saw them walking with their dog and their kids, you wouldn't realize the story they had. They were stranded in their house for like 3 days and couldn't get out of it, and the only dry area in the house for their kids, which were twins, I believe, twins or triplets, might have been triplets, but they were putting them on the kitchen counter. That was the only dry spot they had, but they couldn't, their position was out in an area such that they couldn't get anybody's attention to come get them. And so they finally, I got out of there. I think they said a friend of theirs sent somebody with a boat because they were wondering where they were, and of course their phones are dead.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. But they were just so calm and cool and thankful that at least they had what they had, which is a hotel they're going to be in for 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And they lost all their cars, their tractors, you know, everything. And they're going out there every day to mud out themselves because there's in that particular area, there wasn't enough volunteers.
Wow.
You know, to help them with the mud out.
What a huge perspective, though, for people out there. You know, sometimes we're in practice and we're like, oh, my volume isn't quite as high as I'd like to. I don't have as many new practice members as I'd like. And sometimes that puts things in perspective, eh? Just to have more gratitude for kind of what we do have, right? Yeah. To grow on that, right? So,
yeah. Yeah. It's very, very eye-opening. But when you go there with a good heart, man, you get paid back. I mean, it's not by money, but. It's very rewarding.
Well, in closing, I always like to give the last few minutes to my podcast guests and just for the Underdog Nation out there, for people who feel like an underdog or they are an underdog or they've been stressed out or anything like that. Do you have any words of wisdom just to leave them with to get them inspired?
Yeah. You know, I listened to your podcast earlier today about the guy that talked about the one thing.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about the one thing, but I, you know, this is what it led me to. The one thing that I teach chiropractors to do that once they learn it and incorporate it, hopefully within a few days or a week, and they don't have to do it perfectly, they just got to do it. The one thing that people tell me all the time that changed their lives almost immediately is pre-framing subluxation. And I'm not going to get into what that is. I can just tell you it's very valuable and it's free on www.socm1895.com. You just got to put in your email address and then you click and look for the free stuff. And it's one of the first ones. I pre-frame subluxations and Dr. Jeffrey Conaghan pre-frame. So that way you can see an old guy and a young guy,
yeah,
you know, doing it. I do the shorter version because I can get away with it because I own it. And
yeah.
Dr. Jeffrey did the longer version, which is what everybody should do until they really own it.
Yeah, 100%. That's awesome. So go to that website, check it out, learn about pre-framing. Rick, where are we meeting after the seminar in Parker in Vegas? Where's the seminar after the seminar?
Well, it's going to be, you know, one of the bars at Paris. And I've been thinking about that. I think I don't know, you kind of helped me with that, but it seemed like the bar that it was easy to find people and see what's going on was that one right as you went in the front door, but I didn't really like the seating there.
Yeah, the seating's a little bit wonky, but I don't know if there's any other options, but it has the big bar, right? So it has the big bar,
right,
that kind of goes right around, and there's some seating in there.
And it got music and that kind of stuff where we kind of enjoy ourselves, yeah.
Yeah, so anybody out there, if you're going to Parker, come in to visit Dr. Rick Wren and me and Brandy.
Absolutely.
Will be there. And if you're having any challenges, come meet up with us and have a chat because we're looking to help as many chiropractors as we can take it to the next level.
Yeah, we want a bigger tribe and more family members.
Yes, 100%. So Dr. Rick, thank you so much for being on my podcast. I appreciate you, brother.
Appreciate you too.
Everybody out there, take some of these cool lessons. Go on Dr. Rick's website there so you can learn about pre-framing subluxation and learn about the 21 keys to grow your practice. And don't forget to get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.